Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Feeders, I'm Jeannie Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company. Well, your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. Well, what is today? Today is fan freaking fabulous Friday with Dr. Duty. Oh my gosh. Last week it was Jassic and today's Dr. Duty. What is the matter with me?
That's okay. I could be called worse things. So
I think it's all of the remodeling that's going on in my house, all of the sanding that's going on. It's getting in my brain, Dr. Jasek. I can't think straight.
You got drywall particles.
Drywall. So how are you? What's going on?
I'm good. We got out camping for the first time this last weekend. So that was awesome. Love to get away and spend some time in nature and decompress a bit. And that was nice. And, you know, now it's back to work, back to fighting the good fight, you know?
Right. So did you see any wild animals? You know, we were just driving to the gym a couple of nights ago and looked to the left of us and there was a bear, you know, and he was just kind of walking around in the field and it was probably, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night, something like that. So seeing a lot of, you know, we always see fox up here and certainly we see, you know, the deer and the elk. But we're seeing a lot more bears. And then somebody posted on next door where they saw a moose and it's a little baby.
Oh, nice.
Nice. But you know what? If they got a baby and you got a dog, don't get near them.
Stay clear.
They're not going to be happy.
They will attack. Yeah. I've heard of dogs getting killed that way because they go after the dog. I mean, they will protect their babies. Because it sounds like they leave people alone more, but if you got a dog, they're very aggressive.
Yeah. That's the way we should be. We should be far more aggressive in our stance to protect our babies, including our dogs, Dr. Jasek.
Speaking of advocating for your pet, this just came through on email. We have a client I was talking to and she was in dilemma because she wanted to get her dog spayed. And of course, you have to get updated vaccines, you know, pretty much anywhere in this area to get that done. And she said, you know, I'm from a small town in Kansas and it's a 3-hour drive. But if the local vet there would spay my dog and not require vaccines, I don't mind making the drive, you know, I can go visit some friends and stuff. And so she called him and no problem. She went down there, got her dog spayed without any vaccines. It was like a $250 spay. So very, very affordable. And I thought, you know, that's a great idea. People don't mind driving a little bit, might not even have to go to Kansas, maybe some rural areas in Colorado with some of the rural vets would just, you know, because a lot of the rules around the vaccines and all that is because of the corporatization, but you get to, you know, some of these smaller country vets out in the rural areas. And I bet we could find more of them that would maybe do some procedures and you know what, let's support those clinics. Yeah. You have to drive a little bit, but you know, it's not like you have to do it all the time. You know, you get your dog spayed or neutered once if you're going to get that surgery done. So you just, you know, you can make a day of it and, you know, gotta look for options. You know, I think if you don't like what you're seeing and what you're finding, then you don't just go with the flow and comply, you know, look for other options, be an advocate. Be like that mama moose, you get out there and you fight for your baby.
You got to wake up, stand up and snap out of it, people. And you could do that right here on the Raw Dog Food Truth podcast. We're going to help you see things differently. I want to give you an update. Becca's dog who went in for her, the laryngeal paralysis surgery.
Oh yeah.
Came out of it like a champ. Now we're not going to know anything. I mean, he came out of the surgery very well. They said this dog is extremely healthy. Now, when she gets out, they tell her, okay, you've got to feed canned dog food, any kind of canned dog food you want. You can feed canned dog food, but don't feed raw. Because if you feed raw right now, since he's had the surgery, all that bacteria is going to compromise his health.
Oh, jeez.
And I was like, okay.
Did she say, oh, all what bacteria? Like, what
bacteria? You know, it's so funny. I think, you know, when I really talk to people, I think they just, and I, you know, you and I would ask that question. What's the bacteria in the canned food versus the bacteria? And what's the, you know, we could just back them into a corner. But I think most of the time people are like, just give me my dog and let me go home. Let me get out of here. Right. But I was just like, please, please. But it's so easy for these vets or white coats, as Dr. William Faulkner likes to call them, to scare people.
And they sort of like, you know, they get people when they're down, because when you're emotional, you know, your pet's in for surgery, it's emotional for anybody. It's emotional for me. You know, one of my pets has to get something done and you're not thinking logically. And you're right. You're not like, you just want your pet to be okay. You want to get your pet back home so you can take care of them. And it's just like, yeah. And you could think later, well, man, I wish I'd said this or that, but you're in the middle of an emotional reaction and you're just thinking about your pet and they know it. That's how they get away with it. It's whether it's directly intentional or they've just figured out that this works and they get away with it. I'm not sure, but I think that's what's going on.
Ridiculous. Okay. So here's another on the side of ridiculous. So I got this email from Kathy Hayes. Kathy says, my dog, a 2-year-old Great Pyrenees, was diagnosed with a UTI and crystals in March. He was given antibiotics. In April, the vet said UTI, it was still there, so more antibiotics. In May, the vet did a urinary culture to find out what antibiotics would work, but the culture said no UTI. My dog has always been a loving pet, but in March, he started growling at me. The vet said he was growling because he was in pain, so they put him on meds for pain. The vet said Struvite crystals are still there, and he'll have to go on Hill's prescription food for the rest of his life. My dog will not eat this food. I don't want my dog in that junk food, and I don't want him on pain meds. Please help me, Cat.
Wow. Do you know what was the dog eating before? Was it eating raw?
I don't know that I know that at this moment. I did have, or our customer service, we asked, did he have a rabies shot before the growling? Mm-hmm. And she said no. But that the vet said the crystals in the urine was painful, and that's why he was growling. Now, she was looking for a food that will help dissolve the crystals, and the vet said Hill's prescriptions diet would do that too. Okay, let's take this and rip this apart, shall we? All right, so here's a question. UTIs. Do we have to put dogs on antibiotics to get rid of UTIs?
I think we need to determine what's going on, like what's the underlying issue in the bladder. So if you have a true like rip-roaring bacterial infection, I'm a big proponent of doing cultures, because if we have symptoms and you just start putting them on antibiotics, but you don't know, first of all, if it's bacterial in the first place, and you don't know what bacteria is growing in there, and you just put them on antibiotics, and certainly after, if symptoms come back after one round of antibiotics, you better be doing a culture. I don't like to use antibiotics at all unless we do a culture, because sometimes we find, like you said, this dog was cultured, no bacteria, but we have symptoms. You know, it's this assumption. Again, this is assumptive medicine. Well, they've got, you know, symptoms, like, and I don't know what was going on with this dog. Maybe they're needing to go out more, or they're, you know, urinating, you know, in smaller amounts, or seem to be straining, or they've had some accidents in the house. And so most vets would just put them on antibiotics, even without a UA. I mean, I think most would recommend a UA, but say they couldn't get one, they would just say, let's just put them on antibiotics and see if the symptoms improve. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But it's not always a bacterial infection. So we've got crystals forming. So one of the reasons I asked about the diet is crystal formation is directly related to the pH of the urine. And whether it's too high or too low, you can get crystals to precipitate out. So if you have crystals and you don't have stones, if you have actual stones in the bladder, that's trickier because those are harder to get rid of. But if you have crystals, all you typically have to do is manipulate the pH of the urine. And that's what these, you know, the Hill's diets. So most of the time when we have crystals, it's that the pH is running too high. That's the most common. We do see some where they run too low. Most of the time it's too high. And so the diets that supposedly dissolve out the crystals help to lower the pH, but it's not a cut and dry thing, because what can happen is they can actually drive the pH too low and then you get another type of crystal form. So I always start with making sure the dog's on a fresh food, species appropriate diet. And sometimes that corrects the problem. If we're starting with kibble, we don't know what this dog was eating before, but say is eating kibble. So wasn't on the type of diet that we'd recommend. We just start with a fresh food diet. And sometimes that clears up the issue. They're getting more moisture when they eat. They're getting a species appropriate diet. They're not getting a bunch of toxic crap in the kibble. And then if we're still having crystals form in our pH, and people can get pH strips and measure their dog's pH at home. You can just check it every morning, see what's your dog's pH running. And then you get an idea, is the pH normal? Is it a little bit off? And then I'll have people report back to me on what the pH is running, and that helps guide me in what we do. There's herbs that can help lower the pH. This is where your berry supplements will sometimes be useful, is like your cranberry supplements. Those will sometimes help lower the pH. And that's all you need to do. But I think we need to look at what's really the underlying cause of this. If it's because the dog was on a poor quality diet to begin with, well, then we need to get the dog on a better quality of diet. And then if we still have crystals and the pH is off, then, you know, we might need to do other things to manipulate it. But I, for the most part, don't like to use antibiotics unless we know that it's a bacterial infection and that the pet is like really symptomatic. You know, pets peeing in the house, and I know we've got a certain bacteria growing in there, and a few days of antibiotics, they're going to feel a whole lot better. Then I will sometimes do that. But that's the other thing too. You know, I see lots of pets that they'll get a urine culture done like automatically on antibiotics for a month. And I say, I don't do more than 5 to 7 days, because that should be all it takes just for the body to kind of get on top of things. And if a pet is on an appropriate antibiotic for a particular bacteria, then it'll act really fast. And you go 3-4 weeks, what are you doing? You're just hammering the gut. You're wiping out the microbiome. And if it hasn't worked in a week, it isn't going to work in a month. That's been my experience with antibiotics.
Well, this comment that your dog has to be on a prescription diet for life, what kind of nonsense is that?
In most cases, I find that if we correct the nutrition and we correct anything else, like we're not over vaccinating, we're not overusing, you know, other preventatives or other pharmaceuticals, and the pet's in good health otherwise, a lot of times that alone corrects the issue. And then if, you know, sometimes we have, you know, little aberrations in metabolism in certain pets, and their pH in their urine might just tend to run a little high or a little low, then we find a way to help correct that. But they're still starting with that foundational, fresh, species appropriate diet.
Right. All right. So here's a question. When a dog has a UTI, will they always or sometimes have blood in the urine?
Oh, just sometimes. I would say it's a common symptom, but they don't have to. The blood comes from the irritation. So if the bladder wall is inflamed or the urethra is inflamed, then it bleeds pretty easily. So I would say that's a common symptom, but they don't they could have a urinary tract infection without seeing blood. And sometimes the blood can be microscopic too. Like we can do a UA and might see some red blood cells in there. You might not see it when your dog pees, especially now that it's, you know, no longer winter and you don't have white snow. They can't white snow. It's pretty easy to tell.
So the next question is, can you mistake, if you're just looking at a dog, okay, and you're watching them defecate or pee, and they seem to be having problems, tails down, seems to be painful, could that be mistaken for a back problem?
Oh, absolutely. Because it's all in the same part of the body, right? And if it's, because you don't know what's causing the pain. Is it the position that they're going into to pee or to poop? Or is it the actual act of urinating? Because if they have an infection, or you know, if the pH is off, I mean, that is irritating. I'll sometimes see dogs lick a lot more when their pH is too high or too low, or they have some crystals. It can be irritating. But I'd have to say, I don't very often see that cause extreme pain, like where they're like, I'm just in excruciating pain as I'm peeing, you know, unless they're, you know, it's a male and maybe there's a little stone that's trying to pass or something and can't get through and they could get blockages and things like that. But as a general rule, it causes like some irritation, like they're going to go more often. They'll start to pee and stop and pee and stop because it hurts a little bit, but it doesn't look like whole body pain, like a painful back would.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if a dog has a painful back, let's say that they've got, you know, they've been jumping something, you know, they just do things and they get out of whack just like people. You know that, right, Dr. Jason?
Oh, yeah.
About back pain.
Oh yeah.
Would they stop eating? Could they be in so much back pain that they would stop eating?
I think that would be pretty unusual. Unless they had pain such that the position of eating. So say it was more like neck pain, it might be painful for them to put their neck down into the food bowl, put their, you know, head down into the food bowl. So trying different positions with the food dish, sometimes that can help and see. But as a general rule, no, they don't. If pets stop eating, I mean, like truly stop eating, I don't mean miss a meal or two, but like don't eat for days, that typically we need to be doing some serious like diagnostics, like imaging, see if there's something going on with the GI tract, maybe doing some blood work. Pets just don't just stop eating for a minor reason. And usually a little bit of discomfort does not keep a pet from eating.
How long do you think that a pet parent should wait if a pet has stopped eating before they actually take them in to do some diagnostic work?
Well, I think if they're drinking, so they need to stay hydrated, because I mean, a dog could live weeks without eating. Not that I would recommend going that long without your dog eating, but they could survive that, but they can't survive more than a few days without drinking. And so if they're drinking, I think they could go 72 hours. I mean, I mean, not eating anything. Like, you know, sometimes pets miss a meal and then people just start offering them all different kinds of stuff, and they'll eat treats and they'll eat human food and they'll eat this and they'll eat that. They just don't want what their regular food is. Well, sometimes that's because they're offering them all this other stuff and they want to see what they're going to get next at the smorgasbord, you know? So, I mean, come, you know, when I say like, you need to like really get in and get some imaging done, if they won't touch a bite of food, nothing, not even their favorite treats. That's pretty serious. So yeah, I'd say maybe even 48 hours if that's the case, you know, just nothing, not touching a bite of food. But it's also useful to do things like take your pet's temperature, because just a fever will cause them not to eat. So if they're running a fever, their body is fighting something, processing something, and they're not eating, but they're drinking, that may be exactly what they need to do, is fast for a couple of days. And then usually the body will resolve what's going on. The fever will come down and they'll be fine. I think the other thing to look for is if we have persistent vomiting, like a pet vomiting multiple times a day, they're not going to, they're most likely not drinking. So this goes back to the hydration thing. They're most likely not drinking, or they can't hold it down. Or if they are drinking, if they're vomiting or have like profuse diarrhea, they're going to be losing so much fluid that they're going to have to stay hydrated. So with symptoms like that, I probably wouldn't go more than, you know, 24 hours if they can't drink. If they're drinking and staying hydrated, then yeah, they can go a couple of days without eating.
Okay. So that's good information there. Always something to look out for. Okay. Another question that came in from Donna is the puppy PMR with bone okay for large breed puppies? We have a 3-month-old Doberman, and we were told too much calcium phosphorus can cause them to grow too fast. Well, I don't think it's the calcium phosphorus that makes them grow too fast. I think it is overfeeding them that causes the giant breeds to grow too fast. But also, Dr. Jasek, I mean, when you're feeding a raw diet that has the 80-10-10 or even the 70-15-15, which is what the PMRs are, meat, bones, organ, and fat, we don't really have to worry about too much calcium in the blends because it's only 10 to 12%. Isn't that typically coming from somebody who may be using a synthetic type calcium in their dog's food?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say is, you know, there's a big difference between feeding a natural source of minerals like ground bone and their balance. That balance is important because it's not just about you need calcium, you need phosphorus. They need to be in the correct ratio. And Mother Nature got it right. And when they're in this correct, they're in the correct ratio in the body that the body needs. So if you're feeding ground bone, that's going to be the ideal mineral content for healthy bones. So yeah, I think it's exactly what you said. When humans start manipulating these percentages with synthetics, you could throw that off. But I think in addition to what you said about that calcium, and even if they were getting too much calcium, I don't think that would cause weight gain. Again, it's the amount, like you said, the amount that they're feeding, and it's the carbs, you know? So if you're feeding a kibble diet, you know, they talk about not too much protein and not too much calcium. What about the fact that they're half of them are processed carbohydrates? That's what puts the weight on them. Is those processed carbs. It just turns to fat in the body and just plumps them out. And that's what makes them put on too much weight and grow too fast.
Exactly. You know what? I was looking in pet industry news. I always get a kick out of reading their stuff. So they had a whole webinar on what to put in cat food to help them lose weight because they are seeing, fat cats. And I'm like, yeah, stop feeding them kibble. You know, they're wanting to put something in there, this fiber, and something that will fill them up. So they will stop eating. That's what it was. It was on cat appetite, how we can curb the kittens and the cat's appetite in the kibble so that they won't gain weight. See, we're not addressing the issue. We're just coming at it from all different sides so we can keep selling the kibble.
Right. Because we don't want to stop selling it. Goodness gracious. These companies would just lose too much money, but yeah, it spikes the blood sugar. I mean, it's just like if you had a donut in the morning and your blood sugar goes up high and you feel great. And a couple hours later, you come crashing down where you're going to be looking for some other sugar fix. And that's basically what kibble is it's a sugar fix and their blood sugar goes up, goes back down. That's why cats are happy, most happy if they're eating kibble when they can just nibble because that blood sugar drops. They just go have a few more bites. They literally get addicted to the carbs and like metabolically dependent on them. And it can be tricky to get cats off of kibble for that reason. But I tell people you got to do scheduled feedings. You decide what you're going to feed your pet. You put that food down. You don't allow them to nibble on kibble in between. You pull it completely away. You give them 15 minutes to eat. They don't eat. You pick up that dish and don't feed them anything else the next feeding. And they'll get hungry enough. I think sometimes part of the problem with food transitions is people keep trying so many different things. The pets just never really get that hungry. I'm not saying we want to starve them or make them go days and days without eating, but you got to let them get good and hungry in between meals or they're not going to be willing to change.
Well, and that's the way they were designed to not be just, you know, grazers, not to graze all day long and every single toy. I mean, this is what Dr. Andy said. We got a lot of neurotic dogs out there. We got to let them be dogs, right? I was reading one of Dr. Faulkner's articles, and he said, look, you know, people are always asking me, which they ask you and they ask me the same thing. What's the best dog food to feed, you know, my cat or my dog? And he said, it needs to resemble prey. It needs to resemble the things that they actually kill. So he said, prey has muscle, bone, organs. It's always fresh. It's raw and warm. I was just like, you know, it's so true, but we've gotten so far away from that. And I was going to give you an update on the vet that had contacted us, and we were talking about why were these Great Pyrenees gaining weight, right? Well, come to find out, they're putting on Dr. Marty's toppers on that. And do you know, when I went and analyzed that, that is 26% carbs. 26% carbs versus a species appropriate diet that is zero to very few. I was just like, so if you're putting 26% carbs on top of their food, stop. And what is going on with these toppers? Why do people feel like they need to put a topper in there? I don't get it.
Because Dr. Marty said so.
That's right. Bing, bing, bing. What do we got for it, Johnny? That's right. I mean, you know, and he's really got this huge marketing campaign going on. I mean, he's figured out how to make a lot of money. So anyway, I said, cut those, go to a two, you know, go to the 2% in the raw, and let's see. Yes, you can overfeed for certain, you know, and I watch my dogs all the time, and it's like, okay, some weeks I'm like, okay, you're getting a little thin, and some weeks you're getting a little heavy, and I adjust all the time, but I don't put toppers on my dog's food. I don't give them carbs.
Yeah. And I think that's important for people to ask, why are they doing it? Like, why do they feel the need to put a topper on it? And, you know, it's a common, and a very common question I get, and you probably do too as well, is this complete? Is this enough? Can I just feed my dog meat and that's all? And it's going to be healthy? I mean, people ask that all the time. It's like, well, it's not. You know, then it comes down to, well, what are you calling meat? Like when somebody says, well, it's just meat, I think the meat is more the muscle meat. And then you have organs and bone and other things that you're adding in. So it's not just meat, because if you were just feeding muscle meat, that wouldn't be a complete and balanced diet. And then, of course, we have the discussion about you do the rotation and all the add in all the body parts and all that. But I think it's a very easy sell to tell people, oh, just give them this topper and it's just going to give them a little fiber and give them some extra vitamins and nutrients just to make sure that diet's complete. And it's the people that makes the people feel better. It does nothing for the pet and often can be detrimental if it's that high in carbs.
Okay. So the last question I have for today is, I had someone contact me that were wanting to switch their cats over to a raw diet, which I will say, a cat is just a mountain lion, you guys. A cat is just a mountain lion. Obligate carnivores, they don't need veggies. Everything else, you know, they need, throw some extra heart in there. Extra heart is great. They cannot make their own taurine, although they're going to get it out of the organs and the dark meat. Throw some extra heart in there. It's perfectly fine. But here's what was happening with these cats. So I said, well, why are you wanting to come over to a raw diet? It was because he was seeing that his cats were getting these rashes. And I said, well, where are the rashes? They were on the neck area.
The itchy neck. I mean, I definitely, if the cat is not, I mean, if a cat were eating like a kibble diet, like high carb, I see a lot of rashes around the face and head and neck due to food. But again, I don't call it food allergies. I think it's inflammation due to certain ingredients, because cats are, as you said, they're obligate carnivores. Any carbs in the diet can be incredibly inflammatory for cats. So I think getting them off of any carbohydrates in the diet, I think, you know, would be you know, would be a first step. And then of course there can be other things. There could be mites, but there could be a reaction to something, like if they did any kind of spot on, you know, like a flea and tick spot on or something like that, that could cause some local irritation for sure. There could be mites. Sometimes stress can cause some of those breakouts, but a lot of them, we have these like real nasty sores and scabs around the face and head and neck. A lot of times that is food related.
Yeah. Well, I hope that they will. I hope that they will come over and start feeding a raw diet. And remember, guys, that cats don't just eat chicken. They don't just eat turkey. They don't just eat rat. I mean, I love it when a household has a dog and a cat, right? Because then the cats can like check out the dog's bowl.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. A little competition.
Right, right. You can see what's going on. But you know, a mountain lion will take down a dog. So people, I've heard that argument. Well, they won't eat beef because they can't, you know, take down these larger animals. Well, they could if they were in the body of a mountain lion. I mean,
exactly. Metabolically, they're the same. They're a feline and they are obligate carnivores. They need to be eating a meat-based diet with a lot of organs in it. That's what cats are going to thrive on.
Yeah. Yeah. So get them on a species appropriate diet. And you can do that by going to rawdogfoodandco.com. Want to work with Dr. Judy Jasek? Super duper easy. You just go over to ahavet.com. A lot of people come in from out of state to see you, Dr. Jasek. But if you want to work with Dr. Jasek via Zoom, you can also do that. You can have a phone consultation. There's so much that she can help you out with. And the holistic vets are few and far between, it seems. So before you go in and become intimidated by a traditional vet, and we need those, Dr. Jasek. I mean, certainly Becca needed that vet to go in and do that surgery mm-hmm. on her dog, right? But as far as getting your nutrition information, probably not the best place to start. You want to start with somebody like a Dr. Duty, as I called you at the first of the podcast, Dr. Duty Jasek.
Dr. Like, who is that? I thought Dee Dee did a podcast with Dr. Jasek. Who's this Dr. Jasek?
Yeah, this is my drywall brain speaking.
Well, and just speaking to that about like the surgery, we can still do a lot of natural holistic things to support a pet before, during, and after surgery. Yeah, the actual surgery, that's 100% conventional. They're going to need to get anesthetic and they're probably going to need some pain meds and maybe some antibiotics. You know, sometimes you just got to roll with that, but we can help the pet recover. We can help talk about proper nutrition that, no, you don't have to go with a canned food. You can, you know, keep a pet on raw pretty much regardless of what surgery it's had. And, you know, might be some exceptions, but I would say very few where the pet just couldn't go right back on to eating a raw diet. And we can do natural things for pain and inflammation, and we can help support that healing process. So even if your pet does need to do, you know, go through surgery, I mean, we can help support the healing process right away. So, you know, get in touch with us. And there's a lot of things that we can do to help your pet heal faster that your conventional vet just isn't even going to know about.
Yeah. And I love the getting your pet ready to go in and have surgery, right? There are a lot of things you can do in that regard. And so that's awesome. That's awesome. All right, you guys, get over to ahavet.com. Be a champion for your pet, as Dr. Jasek would say. And we here at Raw Dog Food and Company, your pet's health is our business. And remember, friends, don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.